You heard us just talking about the NFL draft starting Thursday. This will be your home. ESPN 102.5, The Game. Yep. The draft starting on Thursday. This Thursday, April 23rd. Right here, 102.5 The Game and ESPN 94.9 for all your coverage. That's presented by Wyatt Johnson Ford, your Nashville Ford dealership. We are waiting to hear from Larry McReynolds. He will be calling in here in just a moment. Willie, what is the latest on your bracket? Is the voting done? I know that we voted yesterday. We asked people to vote. Is that closed down or is that still going?
I believe it'll close down in the next few minutes here. In fact, I think
every time I looked,
over, but
you had a commanding lead. Where was it the last time you looked?
I'm going to get through. I'm going to have a berth in the elite in
all
the
right.
Elite Eight. It's a decisive win on Twitter, thanks to all of you. Instagram and Facebook, I think, were more even, but it's a total between all three platforms. So. I'm going to move on, and it looks like I'm going to take on Doc Rivers' son, Jeremiah, a great player, class of 2006, in the next round for a berth in the Final Four. So the one seed against the two seed.
So a lot of Rivers in this bracket, huh?
Yeah, there are three brothers that all played for my high school, Winter Park, down in Florida. Two of them were better than the third. The third was a good role player and played on some. On a state championship team, but
so he's Cooper
Jeremiah. He might be the Cooper. Yeah,
wow.
Yeah. Okay, although Cooper is the oldest Manning brother, but Jeremiah, you guys might remember him briefly playing for Georgetown in Indiana. He was more of a role player, but played major college Division I basketball. He's the oldest, and then obviously everybody knows Austin. He's the all-time leading scorer. Played on two state championship teams at Winter Park and played a season at Duke. Right before moving on. I think he played at one point. He might have played for his dad, but of course, Doc Rivers, great player in the NBA, and of course, a longtime coach, coached the Magic for a long time. That's why his boys all went to high school down there.
No doubt about it. So we will await Larry McReynolds.
Yeah, he should be calling any minute now because they're just wrapping up a production meeting.
Where
so
are
set
we?
Set the table here.
Yeah, where are we on the NASCAR front? Yeah, let's talk about that.
I believe everything that I have heard indicates that they're pretty close. So what we're seeing now is the state of Texas, their governor, Greg Abbott, he tweeted yesterday, just spoke to NASCAR leaders. They're working to return to Texas at Texas Motor Speedway very soon. I hope to announce the exciting details in the near future. This will be without fans, but it'll be a great show for TV. So all indications are the Memorial Day weekend race at Charlotte, the Coca-Cola 600, is probably going to be a go without fans. They will probably run that race. Now I'm seeing potential reports of having a race the week before at a track that would be relatively close to Charlotte. Texas could be that, because I know that they want to go ahead and try and get that date made up. But it seems like mid-May or late May, NASCAR is going to be back without fans. And this is getting support from North Carolina legislature of deeming NASCAR an essential business to reopen the shops to allow racing at the Charlotte Motor Speedway. But it seems like that they are trying to put together a schedule to get things going. Eddie Gossage is the – and Darren, I think you've talked to him many times,
yep.
The president at Texas Motor Speedway. He
is
–
Nope.
No, not Goose Gossage.
Not even Goose's brother.
He said...
No relation. Not that I know of. I don't remember ever having that conversation about there being a relationship.
He said, quote, let's say the Coke 600 goes off on time. That leaves 2 weeks after. I can see that making some sense to us. Not doing it in front of a crowd. You can do Cup and IndyCar or even four races. It can be done. Now, here's something to consider. Roger Penske, who's a team owner in NASCAR, now owns IndyCar. He is the owner of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and the IndyCar. So I have a feeling you're going to see some joint weekends with NASCAR and IndyCar since they're not going to have fans and because they go to a lot of the same tracks. So I could see some doubleheaders taking place with IndyCar and NASCAR. And, you obviously have the Xfinity and Truck Series that have to run. But You've brought this up, Darren. We've talked about it. It would be a huge opportunity for the sport to kind of be the first to get back, and they could have a lot of eyeballs on them with TV if they are able to pull this off.
Well, in all seriousness, Willie, he is not related to Goose, but do you know where Eddie Gossage went to school?
I do not.
MTSU.
Really?
And he's the president of the Texas Motor Speedway. Yeah. Yeah, he is a proud grad of State University. No?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah. How about that?
We have something in common.
He's a Blue Raider.
He is a Blue Raider.
There you go, Chase.
Huh. The more you know, the more you learn so much on this show.
And by the way, that is Middle Tennessee State University. That's how you properly say that for people who missed the – you just made the list.
Right.
What was that, about 2 months ago?
Right. But let's not overlook the fact that, Darren, you did once get on the list in Winnipeg for mispronouncing the name of their building. A similar pronunciation. Back when it was called the MTS Center.
I did. And I also
Darren, this was Darren's rookie year doing the games, which means it was my rookie year doing the games on radio. And you should have seen the look on our engineer's face, you know, sitting to our left. Stu Grimson and I were doing the game. And there's a local guy producing the radio game from the rafters up there in Winnipeg, which you guys have both seen and been to. And so Darren says, from the MTSU Center in Winnipeg. And this guy's eyebrows raised up. He was like, what is he talking about? The MTSU Center.
That actually, you know what? Also,
you did Winnipeg. That?
Oh, there's no doubt. And I think Winnipeg also got me on Twitter during that game. In fact, I think it may have been the same game. I don't know. I also spelled Winnipeg incorrect.
I remember that.
I do remember spelling Winnipeg incorrectly on Twitter.
Rookie mistakes.
Okay, so you signed on from the MTSU Center. That's what you said.
Oh yeah.
How did I miss this?
Oh yeah.
No, this was not. This was the first year of doing it.
This isn't when we were there.
Pre-game, going to the booth, a visit to the booth.
Gotcha.
And it was Willie and Stu, and I said, live from the MTSU Center in Winnipeg.
That's fantastic.
Stu and I looked at each other. We were trying not to laugh.
Willie,
so
did
bad.
You say it, anything? It, did you call me out or no?
I think we tried to gently let you off the hook. And of course, Stu is never averse to throwing in the smart aleck comment after that. So that was funny. So the whole rest of the season, you know, every time, and Pete Weber, you know, he loved that too. So we told that story. So we will always remember that one. And it was right in that same time, that same pregame show, you asked us to give a description of the weather in Winnipeg, and you're like, "What is Winnipeg like?" You know, really. I was like, "Darren, there's a guy in the studio over there. This,
the engineer, he lives here.
Yeah,
so he kind of keeps us on the air."
Yeah, so please don't bang on this town so much.
The learning curves of the first year. Oh, my. So we just learned something that, one, I screwed up Winnipeg a lot my first year doing Preds games, and we learned Eddie Gossage went to MTSU. So that's what started this whole conversation.
All coming back to the Blue Raiders.
And let's see if we can package that into a segue. Larry McReynolds is on the line with us, NASCAR analyst for Fox. Larry, good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Hope you guys are all doing good.
Yeah, we went down a weird rabbit hole. We started talking about Eddie Gossage, and I brought up that he attended Middle Tennessee State University, which is just down the road from where I am right now, and we just got off on a tangent. So how have things been on your end?
You know, it's been good. I mean, it's been definitely I'm 61 years old, and it's been probably the most interesting 4 or 5 weeks that I've probably ever experienced. But we just take it one day at a time, trying to be smart, trying to be safe. I really only leave the house about one day a week, and that's to go down to the Charlotte studio about 40 minutes away to be part of the iRacing events that we've been covering on Sunday. But other than that, I do not leave here except for bare necessities. But I told somebody earlier this morning, other than not leaving the house, I almost feel like I'm as busy or busier than I was when we were in normal times. I mean, we have figured out, our bosses have figured out how we can still do the Race Hub show on FS1 every night. We do it through Zoom, as we see with a lot of other sports talk shows. You know, the iRacing, I've been earlobe deep with it for the last 4 to 5 weeks, trying to learn as much as I can about that, because before this all happened, I didn't even know how to spell iRacing. So that's been a little bit of a challenge. But no, we're still do the radio show on SiriusXM and NASCAR radio every day. So staying busy, but it's definitely different times.
No doubt. I mean, I've been blessed to be in this business 2+ decades, and I never thought in my lifetime I would be sitting in my house watching iRacing ever in my lifetime. And I would also watch today before the show, sitting there watching Denny Hamlin wreck his daughter in their house, and I would just be glued to stuff like that, right? We just never thought in our life, talking and covering sports, that that would be a part of the fabric of what we do, but here we are.
Yeah, I mean, everything is far from normal, and it's like I told my youngest daughter, Kendall, who's 22 years old, the other day. She said, "Dad, when do you think things will get back to normal?" And I said, "Well, I've got to be very honest and very candid with you that our new normal is probably not going to be what we know is normal." And you know what? Quite honestly, shame on us if it is. If we just go back doing all the same stuff that we were doing prior to this pandemic, then, you know, we're probably going to get in trouble again. So, you know, it's not something any of us wanted to see, but it's, I think, for the most part, it should be, and hopefully is, a huge wake-up call of just the way we live our lives.
Yeah, Larry McReynolds on the line with us, and we will indeed talk about that in just a moment, Larry, but I would be remiss if I didn't bring up today, unfortunately, 5 years ago, you lost a friend, a colleague, and anybody who covered the sport, man, if you ever had a run-in with Steve Burns, he was somebody that left a mark in your life, and it's hard to believe it's been 5 years today.
It really is, you know, and Steve and I were teammates, you know, from the time I started working with NASCAR on Fox, and he started working back in the early part of 2001 up until we lost him in April of 2015. And, yeah, he was a coworker, he was a teammate, but first and foremost, he was just a really good friend. But as I said in a tweet that I sent out earlier this morning, I feel like I'm a better person because of getting to know and being able to work with Steve Burns. He just, the consummate professional. I don't think you could look the world wide and find anybody that would or could say anything negative about their relationship or their encounters with Steve Burns. He just was genuine. He was authentic. And there's probably not very many days that goes by that I don't think about him in some shape, form, or fashion.
Well said. So as we all try to come out of this, and like you said, be responsible when we do come out and figure out how this is all going to work, but it does look like we're starting to see some real sunshine in the sports world of, you know, sports organizations starting to say, okay, we are targeting this as our attempt to come back. How do you think? I think fans, we can push that aside and realize that it's not going to be with fans in the stands anytime soon. But how do you think this is going to work on your end moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, I obviously can't speak for my bosses at Fox, but, you know, it's definitely going to be different. It's going to be a very aggressive schedule. It's going to be a very different schedule. I think if you just do the simple math, it goes to show you that. Steve Phelps, the president of NASCAR, roughly a month ago when all this kind of unfolded, said that it will continue to be our goal to get all the remaining 32 points races in, because it's a 36 race schedule. We have 4 in the books with 32 to go. He said it will also be our goal to not mix and mingle regular season races with playoff races. Again, we've got 22 regular season races to run and 10 playoff races. And, you know, it might not be the schedule as we know it, you know. Regular season races could become playoff races and vice versa, just the way things are going to need to work out. You know, the possibility of one-day shows rolling in there and qualifying only and racing could be the norm. We could see some doubleheader weekends where there's a race on Saturday, there's a race on Sunday. And when I say that, you know, we have that a lot, but with different series, but we could see two cup races, which we were scheduled, and we'll see that anyhow at Pocono in late June, because that's been on the schedule well before all this happened. We could see some midweek races, some primetime races. The moral of the story is a lot of things that we have talked about over the last several years, it looks like it may come to fruition and we may get an opportunity to try it. It's not the reason we want to try it. We'd certainly hate to see any of this that's happen, but it may force us to actually try things that we've kind of thought about and talked about for the last several years.
Larry McReynolds, Fox NASCAR, with us, and I'm looking at this with the glass half full. I think that's the positive in all of this is what you just mentioned, the things that have been discussed and rumored. Now you may have a chance to try and can prepare for the future. I kind of think that's how they're looking at it, don't you?
No question. It's twofold. It solves, you know, two things. One, to get all the races in, and that's really important for the industry. We know any sport that has had to postpone events or even cancel events or shorten their schedule, that no matter what the sport is, you take a hit. But the industry itself, with NASCAR being so reliant on sponsorship, that's the lifeline of a team is sponsorship. The lifeline of the broadcast partners is advertising dollars. So when you reduce those number of events, it reduces the revenue that everybody gets to take in. So I think the one thing that NASCAR is looking at, you're just not going to create a perfect world. No matter how you try to get there to satisfy fans and teams and manufacturers and racetracks and just go on and on and on, you'll never get there in this situation. So I think what they're doing is looking at the two most important things, and that's the safety and well-being of what people would need to be at the racetrack, which would be the teams, the officials, the broadcast partners, and then secondly, just trying to get all these events in. Yeah, we would hate to see these events run without fans in the grandstand, but to be able to run them and be able to put them on broadcast television or radio for that matter, then, again, it's not the perfect world, but at least we would be back to racing.
Larry, I've spent a lot of this time, I've been a NASCAR fan my whole life, so I've spent a lot of this time watching old races that either you guys have been showing on Fox or NBC or YouTube, and including a couple of Daytona 500 wins from you with Davey Allison and Dale Earnhardt. But I've been able to look at the evolution of how the racing has changed. And you go back to the 90s and the momentum that the sport had, and then the 2000s with the Car of Tomorrow, which was necessary for safety, but it changed a lot of the racing. NASCAR was starting to get some of the momentum back. So how important is it to capitalize on that with this and possibly getting the races back and being one of the first sports that is back to help build that momentum that was already happening?
Yeah, I mean, I look back at our first four races, Daytona and then three races out on the West Coast, and the racing was and has been about as good as we've had in a long, long time. And, yeah, the last thing we wanted to see is to have a hold on what we were building. But I think with the iRacing that my bosses at Fox and FS1 has elected to have us do, and I tell you, a wake-up call to me that we might be generating some new NASCAR fans. Certainly when you're the only game in town, that helps the cause. But if I go back to our very first iRacing event at Homestead Miami Speedway about a month ago, yeah, we had over 900,000 viewers, which was a lot for a virtual race. But then a few days later, they came out with the number that of those 900,000-plus households that tuned in that day for that race, over 200,000 of them, almost 25%, had not tuned in to a single NASCAR event in 2020. So I think if we are the only game in town and we we will be the first to come back, then I think we've got an opportunity not only to keep our momentum, but to also bring in new fans that's not been a part of the NASCAR fan brigade.
You bring up the iRacing, and because of, you know, and I was aware of it being a race fan, but I had never been on it, so I signed up for it. And crew chief, I might need your help. I'm very loose, and I keep spinning out, but it's a lot of fun, and it's cool to see, you know, you brought it up to start this, that you're learning more about it, and your analysis, Jeff Gordon, of course, and he's been in the sim a couple times, and listening to Mike Joy and involving Clint Bowyer, it's been fun to see those different elements of the show while bringing people some form of racing, because these drivers are all competitive and have really embraced it.
No, they really have. And, you know, they're bringing their sponsors a little bit of showcasing in a time when, if we didn't have the iRacing, that they would be getting absolutely nothing. But, you know, when our bosses at Fox and FS1 out in L.A. and here in Charlotte, when they reached out to us about doing this, they had two objectives. First and foremost, I kind of go back to what I said a while ago about getting back to the track. They mandated that we did not turn our back on the safety and well-being of all of us doing these broadcasts. We're doing it with a very skeleton crew, about 10 or 12 people. We go to that studio. I walk in there wearing a mask and gloves. I go to my room that I'm in by myself. Mike and Jeff are in a room by themselves. They're probably 12 to 14 feet apart. Clint Bowyer's in a separate room because our boss has said, we're going to make sure you guys are taken care of and not putting yourself in any harm's way. But then the other objective was, when a time that everybody is distraught and they need a little bit of entertainment, that we, on a Sunday afternoon every week, that we could, for an hour and a half to 2 hours, bring a little bit of entertainment and fun and create a distraction for what's going on in our society right now. And we iterate that every week when we have our conference calls on Thursday about what our goal is. But yeah, it's, our guys are competitive. You know, if they go out and do a pickup basketball game or just go out and play a round of golf, I promise you, they're there to do one thing and one thing only, and that's win. And it's really not been any different with this iRacing.
You and Bowyer are hilarious together, by the way. I'm loving it.
He's our Rob Gronkowski. I don't know what I would be. I don't think I'd be Bill Belichick. But, you know, again, we talked about it. And that's kind of the Fox philosophy. I go back to when they put our team together almost 20 years ago, in late 2000. They gave us a lot of mandates, but the number one mandate over and over and over was have fun. If you're not having fun, there's no way the people at home that's watching you can be having fun. So, and they've really mandated that. In this, we still want to respect that we're doing a broadcast of a race. And you know what? We don't sell it as the real world, which I will say, it's about as close to the real world as I've ever seen with anything, and still be virtual. But it's just about some entertainment and having a little bit of fun. When that right now, that's something everybody needs a little bit of.
Larry, as we wrap this up, yesterday after the show, I just happened to be flipping around the channels, and Armageddon was on with Bruce Willis, and William Fichtner was in that movie, if you remember, and I started thinking back. Liz Allison and I used to do a show before every race out at the Nashville Super Speedway, and for whatever reason, he was there before one of the Busch races. In fact, I don't remember what the series was called way back then, when it was here, and he came and sat down and talked to us and just started reminiscing about some of the, you know, the racing and people we used to talk to. We had a great show at our new convention center downtown back in December when you guys were getting ready for the award show here in town. Of course, we talked to a lot of people in your business about that, your sport coming back to this city. Nashville needs NASCAR, a presence back in this market, especially at the fairgrounds. How cool that would be. How much chatter do you hear in your circles about that?
Well, obviously, over the last month, that's kind of dissipated. You know, we were anticipating before the season started that by now, or at least by the middle of next month, that we would have the 2021 NASCAR schedule out, and that we were anticipating it was going to have a very different look to it, that there may be some tracks that we go to twice now, that we would only be going to once in 2021, and there may be some tracks that we haven't been going to that may be on the schedule, and certainly Nashville Super Speedway is one of those. You know, I think a good start was bringing the banquet to Nashville, the awards banquet, to your point, as we did there in December. So, yeah, I guess now even all of that's kind of been put on hold, because we sit here pretty much today on April the 21st, 2020, and we don't even know what the rest of the 2020 schedule looks like.
Sure.
But I think it's a place that everybody would embrace. I saw some pictures of it the other day, and it looked amazing. Of course, it's one of the tracks that I cut my teeth on as a mechanic back in the 70s with late model cars, dragging our car up I-65 every Saturday afternoon for that three-and-a-half-hour drive from Birmingham, Alabama. So it has a little special place in my heart. The only thing that I kind of raise an eyebrow about is, I don't know how many years after we quit going to Rockingham that the fans said, we want Rockingham back. We want Rockingham back. Well, you know what? NASCAR brought it back. Now, it wasn't with the Cup Series. It was with the Truck Series. They did it for 2 years. And I went over there for both races, and the weather was amazing. And I was so disappointed. The fans just did not turn out. So I hope, if NASCAR does come back to Nashville, whether it's Cup, whether it's Xfinity, whether it's trucks, whether it's two of the three or whatever, I just hope the fans live up to what they've been asking for, and that's bringing NASCAR back to Nashville.
Yeah, unfortunately, because we got burned the first go-around with Dover and the Super Speedway, we thought that track was built for a Cup race, and it never happened. And once everybody realized it wasn't going to happen, that's when they stopped going. Unfortunately, I think, Larry, for this thing to truly work and there to be an explosion and this to be a hot, hot ticket, which it would be, it would have to be the Cup Series, because this market got burned, and I think they'll be very hesitant to come back unless we know for sure it's a Cup race. That's just my opinion. That's my dealings with going through that the first go-around.
Well,
and of course, NASCAR leaving
in the
80s.
I think the mindset of the people guiding the NASCAR ship has changed a little bit. You know, I think there was always the fear, well, we can't go to a track that doesn't have 80, 90,000 seats. But I think that mindset has changed a little bit. I think people realize now, you know what, if we can just fill the seats and fill to capacity, you know what, that makes it a little bit of a special race and a special event. So, again, I think we got to get 2020 back on track, and then I'm sure for the sake of a lot of folks, the 2021 schedule, we should be looking at it not too far down the road.
Larry, really appreciate the visit. You continue to be safe, and we look forward to watching your work hopefully really, really soon on the NASCAR side of things. Thanks for joining us.
Well, I appreciate it and love everybody that follows me on Twitter, at LarryMack28. And I do promise, when we absolutely know we're going to go back racing, the old Larry Mack countdown will start, how many days it will be till we're back at the track. And being from Alabama, I saw an interesting stat the other day, but I will not share that with you, and that's how many days it's been since Tennessee beat my Crimson Tide. It has been a long, long time.
We've seen the same count. It's a sore subject in these parts.
You guys take care.
All right, thank you, Larry.
Larry
McReynolds, NASCAR on Fox, and that meme has been making its rounds of how long it's been since Tennessee has beaten Alabama in football. Good discussion there. We'll come back and talk a little bit about what you just heard on the other side. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Good conversation with Larry McReynolds, Fox, NASCAR on Fox. Ryan Leaf, to start the third hour of the program, we'll get into a lot of things with him as the draft is going to be on Thursday. What did you guys make of some of the things we heard out of Larry?
Well, first, I'm digging the Prince coming back 4 years ago today.
Yeah, yes. 4 years ago today, unfortunately, we lost Prince.
Good underrated Prince song right there, too.
I was wondering if you, if because that's, Marquise had said, I'm playing a deep cut coming back.
That's Pop was, Life.
Yeah.
Pop Life.
Yeah, that's
I had the I had the tape back in the day, Around the World in a Day. That was the follow-up to Purple Rain. That was the next album.
Yeah, that's a great song. That's probably one of my favorite Prince songs is Pop Life. So it's a good song.
It's a good one.
Wasn't he supposed to come to Nashville?
That was what I heard. That
the rumors were that Nashville was going to be kind of one of those like pop-up shows.
Yep.
Yeah. It's too bad.
Before he died. But back to what you were asking about Larry McReynolds, I thought there was a lot of interesting stuff there because I think that, and you've brought this up, that NASCAR has a grand opportunity to be one of the first sports back, and it sounds like they're moving in that direction. And something that I've talked about, whether it was on this show or Chasing Checkers, that they are wanting to revamp things for 2021. They have some solid leadership in place that is trying to take them back to, they're never going to have the popularity that they had in the late 90s, but take them back to being relevant again. And they were making headway. And part of that is changing the schedule up. And I ironically had a conversation last season with Ryan Newman, who of course is still recovering from his wreck at Daytona, but they had just announced this season's schedule. And he said, look, it's a step in the right direction, but it needs to be different, and it should change every year. That's going to keep people interested and keep people coming to these tracks. And so I thought it was cool that Larry brought that up, that now they can test some of that. They can test the midweek races or the one-day shows, as he calls it, and doing the weekends of getting two races in one weekend. And that will also allow them to, if they want to keep running 36 races, fine, but they could do it in a shorter amount of time. It's like running doubleheaders in baseball. I think that would be good for the sport and keep them out of football season and not having to compete with football.
Yeah, I did take some of that from him of them probably trying to, because of what's going on, that this will give them the opportunity. There's no reason to question, you know, trying new things in this, you know, in this climate of 2020. Of them trying to maybe do some things that they've talked about, but just maybe they've just never pulled the trigger on. And so you can pull the trigger on a lot of things, experimental things, you know, when you come back and see if it's a good idea or bad idea. Nobody's going to fault you, right? Nobody's going to say anything in 2020. Whatever happens in 2020 sports-wise, no one's going to question you because of the unusual circumstances. So you can get away with experimenting. And seeing if things work or don't work. I do believe in what I said to him, though. It won't work coming back here unless it's a cup race. I mean, it's got to be a cup race.
It's going to be cup.
Agreed.
It's going to be cup. I can just tell you that. They know that, and they know that this is a market that they need to be in. And with the if they go to the fairgrounds and not the super speedway, which the super speedway is not on the table in these conversations, they'll fix up the fairgrounds. It's – what, 5-10 minutes from downtown? I mean, you're right in the middle of things. So, you know, the TV crews and everybody would stay most likely downtown. They're getting the hotel
circus.
Space.
Well, they wouldn't have a choice. I mean, where else are you going to stay in that area?
And I mean, look, you know, Clint Bowyer would run Broadway. I mean, a lot of the other drivers would.
I also think you would kind of need some sort of – you'd have to have a big-time shuttle service to get people from downtown or whatever into the facility, right? It's so crammed. You got to be creative in how you get – you can't just say, hey, everybody just park your car over here. There's just not enough room.
Well, and what's – you know, I brought this up when we were having the soccer stadium conversation. They have such a grand opportunity, and I know it's a tight space over there, and they're going to have to get creative, but – with a soccer stadium and a renovated racetrack, that can become a really cool area. And not to mention the new buildings that they've put up to have, you know, they have the sports arena that they've rebuilt that has had a lot of events, the flea market, everything they can do over there. And now that it's fixed up, I mean, it's such a tremendous opportunity for Nashville. But that's why I think there needed to be room for both soccer and NASCAR. And it sounds like that's what's going to happen. But 2021, not going to happen, not going to be here yet, but by 2023, 2024, sure, absolutely.
Oh, I think 2024 at the latest, right? I mean, I just think you get after it and you get it done. I mean, I think you get a venue that holds 40,000. You think that's a right? Something along
30 to
those
40,
lines,
somewhere in there.
30 to 40.
How much would you have to expand to get it to that?
Well, you basically, how I've described this to people, and they've released renderings that it's like a $60 million renovation. You basically have to tear down everything but the track. I mean, they got to redo the grandstands and build a new press box and all of that. They got to redo the infield, and then the track itself is fine. They may repave it, even though I've heard drivers say don't touch it. No, and drivers are very particular about that. They like character within a racetrack, so they're saying don't touch it, that it's fine. But I think they would have to do that. So. I don't know what it holds now, to be honest with you, but they would tear those existing seats down and just start from scratch, if I had to guess.
What does it hold? Maybe 20?
Yeah, that seems right. And you could put, a lot of tracks have gone through. One of my favorite places to sit at a race was the backstretch at Talladega. No longer exists. They've torn those seats down, just like Daytona did. And they've moved everything to the front stretch because a lot of tracks, and you heard Larry bring this up, they thought they needed 70 to 100,000, and now they're realizing they don't, and so they're removing seats. Darren, you and I were at Daytona when they were doing that, the Daytona Rising project, and it's worked. I mean, they've sold out the 500, and it's they've had great crowds, and they're all on the front stretch. So you could do something like that. Obviously, this is a half mile in Nashville, but they could easily do that. Put 30 to 40,000, and that's all they need. Make it an event. Make it a hot ticket.
40,000, it would be a hot ticket, sold out easy. But you got to, it's got to happen.
And as Larry was saying, there's something to be said. There's something to be said for a smaller venue that's packed, and unique. I like that. I like that idea a lot when you envision it. And at the same time, Darren, you got me thinking just with the I call it the old facility. It was brand new not long ago, but I mean, this is a much better option to do it close to downtown. I think it would be way better. But if you ever did want to revive that, could you?
You could.
The old Super Speedway?
Here are the issues I've always had with it. Number one, it was boring.
It's a boring track.
It was very boring. Yeah. It had no character.
It's a mile and a third, and it's just boring.
Yeah, no, hardly any banking in the turns, concrete track, which that's fine. But there are... You have to have character with a racetrack. And they went through this where NASCAR went wrong when they were at their peak. Then they all of a sudden were like, we got to expand, got to get out of the Southeast. They built all these cookie cutter tracks that all looked the same, all raced the same. They made the cars be all the same, and they made it boring. And unfortunately, the Nashville Super Speedway happened during that time. And the thing that's so unique about the short track at the fairgrounds is, number one, it's a short track, and they need more of those. That's beating and banging old school racing. It has character with a dip in turn three that you have to hit just right, and drivers like that. That creates entertainment for the fans. So to answer your question, I don't see it. I think unfortunately it was a waste of money. I know they got 7-8 years out of it, but it's too far out of the city. For one, people aren't going to drive all the way out there, and it was a boring race.
Well, they would. I mean, it's not that far out. I mean, look at some of these tracks. Look at the Kentucky Speedway. That's out in the middle of nowhere. I mean, if you had a track that had some character and it was a cup race, don't tell me people wouldn't go out there. We never had a cup race. And you get a cup race and you add some character to the track, they would sell it out. It would be fine. The location would have Gladeville would not affect anything, but we never got the cup race, and everybody thought that that's what the point of the building the track was.
Yeah.
And that never happened. And once people figured out that was never, I mean, think about the open. Did you ever go to an open wheel race?
No, and that's one regret that I have.
I went to all of them, and they were
I went
packed.
To a bunch of them.
Did it look like people cared if it was in Gladeville, Tennessee for the open wheel races? It was slammed. Those were the most successful races they had.
I enjoyed those more than anything else, to be honest with you.
Well, and they, with the with the Busch Series, you know, for a while they raced Easter weekend. They raced Saturday, the day before Easter. And they got great crowds for that because they got the Cup drivers. And so people went out for that.
Right.
And that was cool for a while.
Yep.
But everybody was doing that because they thought, all right, we're going to get a Cup race. Yep. That's what's going to happen. Because I went to that weekend quite a bit, and it was a lot of fun. I mean, Harvick and Edwards and Kyle Busch and Denny Hamlin, I mean, they were all in the Cup Series at that point, but they were running that weekend, Michael Waltrip. But that's where they messed up. But I go back to the fairgrounds. You're in Nashville at that point. You're in downtown. You have that in the background. I think they'd sell it out. The drivers would love it. It's got character, and it would be huge for this city.
To answer your question, Willie, could it work? Absolutely. Back out at the Super Speedway. But the way our city is today, it just makes way more sense for it to be at the fairgrounds, because we've already seen, you know, the Germantown area. There are two areas in this town that people who have moved here in the last 4 or 5 years, they don't understand. But people that have been here a while, they do understand the transformation. There was nothing to the Germantown area. Where the Sounds play, there was nothing to that area. Nobody ever talked about that area unless you went to the farmer's market. I mean, that was it. And look at that whole area, the transformation since the Sounds' new ballpark and what it's done for that area. And it's the same thing will happen to the fairgrounds. Nobody has talked about the fairgrounds unless it was really just bad stuff, negative stuff, for a long time. All this, you know, an MLS stadium, a Cup race, that whole area will explode. And, you know, people that never saw it before, people that move here then, they won't understand. But it would change everything. It just makes – that's where our city is now. So they need to do it at the fairgrounds because of what it'll do. And it'll be a great location, just kind of like what we talked about, how quick it'll be to get to downtown. And if NASCAR's here and they're staying downtown, they've got the hotels filled up, they're going to be out having a good time downtown, and it just makes sense. But could you make the Speedway work if that was truly the only option, the Super Speedway? Yes, you could. But it would have to be a Cup race, and they'd probably have to do a little something. I don't know what you do. But you
put about 10 degrees of banking in the corners and something. Put asphalt down.
Yeah, you gotta give it something else than what it is, because it was just a mile and a third, and it was boring. It was just – there was nothing to it. So, but I don't think that's in the cards. I think the fairgrounds is where it needs to be, and hopefully that's where it'll be. We'll come back and put a bow on hour number two of Darren Donick and Chase next. Ryan Leaf will start the third hour of Darren Donick and Chase. We'll also have Ben Troop, former Titans tight end, join us in the third hour. So a loaded third hour here on this Tuesday. We got into the Jags saga with Mike DiRocco in the first hour. Good conversation with Larry McReynolds here in this second hour. So, yet again, some really good interviews, and we were just kind of talking about the future of possibly NASCAR in this city. But right now, for Thursday, it's going to be the future of the Tennessee Titans. We played you about half of John Robinson and Mike Vrabel yesterday speaking to the media, and it's interesting. If you talk to enough people, I know Floyd put out yesterday kind of his mock draft or what he was thinking, and Floyd did this so many times. If he was in the 29 spot, it seems like from yesterday's conversation, he's looking to do what you've been bringing up, Chase, and that is get out of the first round, collect maybe another pick or two.
Yeah, I just feel like that's what's going to happen. And you know, everybody does mocks. We're going to do one on Thursday on the rundown, the 9 o'clock hour. And should be a lot of fun, and I've already been given the draft order, and I'm picking for the Titans at 29. So, but no trades are allowed. But if I could trade, I would try and trade out. I mean, I think John Robinson. One thing I brought up this morning, and you guys know this, he's going to be asked a question, he's going to give you an answer, and he's not going to say anything at all. And that's exactly what he did when he was, you know, when it was brought up of trading out. He, you know, basically talked and didn't give a definitive answer. And why should he? I mean, why would you show your hand? But I do believe he's talking to other GMs and seeing what's available, and will continue to do that as the draft gets underway. It's all about draft capital, and they need a lot of depth. That those are the holes that they have right now. And so I don't think he necessarily has to pick at 29. And if he can acquire that fourth-round pick that he doesn't have, and that could lead to Keyshawn Vaughn, then I think that's a win. Or somebody like Keyshawn Vaughn, I should say.
So you're saying John Robinson has learned a lot from watching Bill Belichick and Floyd Reese over the years?
Yeah, in fact, and I think I've brought this up before, when I was at the Combine a few years ago with Floyd, we were standing there watching John, and Floyd's just laughing. And I said, "What's so funny?" And he goes, "He's talking but not saying a darn thing."
Well, if anybody knows what that looks like, it's Floyd Reese.
Yeah, and you have
Floyd
to do
Reese
that.
Did it with a big smile on his face.
I think that's one thing that makes, you know, a good GM or a coach, that you know you're going to be asked, you know that the media has to do their job, but how can you answer a question without answering it? And John has been very good at that, and so he keeps his hand very close to him, and you're not going to see his cards. He will tip some, but that's all plan. That's all part of the plan, and you have to decide if he's bluffing or not.
And I think if you're the media, you have to try to ask your question in a way that can give you some clues. I think you can work a guy like that, because the best are never going to tell you anything they don't want to tell you. But they might give you a few tidbits and clues if you ask the question the right way. Would you guys agree?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I agree with that. But I also think that they control the message. I mean, Nick Saban is a prime example of that. And Marquise knows this for covering him, working at Alabama. I mean, he has an agenda every time he reaches the podium. I mean, he's going to deliver his message, and he's going to do it his way. And a lot of times that's directed at his players. But
at least you get stuff out of Nick Saban. Like Bill Belichick, you get nothing but just mumbling. I mean, you get nothing. Floyd, you felt like you were getting something. That was kind of the beauty of Floyd. Like I said, he'll sit there and give you this elaborate answer saying absolutely nothing with a big smile on his face, and you feel good about it, but you didn't learn anything because he didn't tell you anything. But it looks good. It's a better presentation than Belichick up there just mumbling around and giving you nothing and very, very short answers. Like, he didn't give anything. Like, right. At least Saban did. And Floyd...
We're on to Cincinnati.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's just...
we're on to Ryan Leaf.
Absolutely nothing. We are on to Ryan Leaf. That's how we will begin the third hour of Darren Donick and Chase. That's next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.